Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Came Back Haunted by Karina Halley, narrated by Joe Raylan. Prologue. There was a man who lived in hell. He hadn't been there that long, but in hell, even a second feels like an eternity. The man didn't deserve to be in hell at all. The last thing he did with one of his many lives was to sacrifice it for a friend of his, someone he had once sworn to protect, someone who proved more complicated than he ever could have imagined. But the thing about hell is that it's not just a place for people who deserve it. The murderers, the rapists, the people who lick the ice cream at the grocery store and put it back in the freezer. No. Sometimes people are just unlucky. In the case of this man, he happened to be in a portal to hell when he died, so it was easy for a demon to drag him in the rest of the way. Though he wasn't perfect, and for most of his life wasn't even mortal, he certainly didn't deserve this fate. But it was because he was special, because he didn't deserve it, especially after the numerous sacrifices he'd made for others during his time on Earth, that an exception was made. Another man, one of his brethren, a mentor, a friend, decided to break the rules and go into hell to get him out, or at least get him as far as he could. To the thin veil, to a place between worlds where he could stay, safe from an eternity of torture, yet doomed to watch the world he once lived in pass him by. He could live with that, though. He had hoped that one day he could step through and rejoin his friends. Weirder things have happened, haven't they? And until then, he would watch and wait, biding his time. It's unfortunate, then, that this man wasn't alone. Something else, something unspeakably evil, was in the veil with him. Also watching. Also waiting. Watching. Waiting, biding its time. Chapter 1. I was 15 when a demon told me to burn down a house. I know he was my Jacob, a supernatural guide that was supposed to help me navigate my affliction, but in the end, he failed. And so in my mind, he's always been a demon to me. What else do you call something that revels in your darkness, that pulls you away from the light? Sometimes it feels like only yesterday, when it's been 11 years now. 11 years since my life started to change for the worse and the better. It's hard to say when so much good has come out of so much bad. Not surprisingly, I was also 15 when I first started seeing a shrink, a man who never for a moment believed me, who thought I was borderline certifiable. He would listen to me under the guise of wanting to help, wanting to understand. But in the end, he was like so many others. It was easier to medicate me and call it a day. Easier to threaten me with loss of freedom, as if that would make all the ghosts and demons go away. Today, I'm sitting in the office of Dr. Lana Lavo, who has become a crucial part of my life over these last 3 years. Going back into therapy was something I fought against for so long. But it wasn't until I mentally hit rock bottom that I realized I didn't have much of a choice. Thankfully, I lucked out with finding a psychologist who listened to my life story inside and out, no secrets, no shame, and seemed to truly believe me when I told her about my dalliances with the dead. And even if she doesn't quite believe me, I mean, who could blame her? She listens and offers solutions, like my word is gospel to her, and honestly, that's made all the difference in the world. So, Perry, Dr. Lavo says to me as I get comfortable on the couch. She has this little scruffy rescue mutt called Porgus who likes to cuddle when you're feeling sad, but so far he's snoozing away in his dog bed in the corner. How are you? The question is always the same, no matter how many or few times I've seen her. After my mother died, I saw her once a week. Now that I've gotten my shit together, that's tapered off to once a month. Progress. Good, I tell her. My answer is always the same, too. She gives me a kind smile, taking her time to observe me for a moment. I like that she does this, that she can glean things from me off the bat without having to talk about it. Sometimes I think she can hear my thoughts, but I haven't dared ask her yet. How easy it would be to lie back and just let her sift around inside my brain and make things right. She tilts her head, her blonde hair falling to the side. Dr. Lavo is surprisingly young. I've never asked her age, but she looks like she's in her early 30s at most. Good, she eventually says, smiling again. But things are different now, aren't they? I look at her for a moment, wondering what exactly she was able to get from my expression. Then I suck on my lip while I think that over, because she's right. Things are different from the last time I saw her. I slowly nod. Yeah, some things have changed. Big things. Big changes. Change is good, Perry, she says to me. Why don't you start with the biggest change, and we'll go from there? I can't help but smile. The biggest change? Well, we're selling the apartment, and we're moving. I don't know when. We haven't put the apartment on the market yet, nor have we started looking, but still. Wow, she says. That is a big change. You've mentioned before that you wanted to move, right? That the memories... They aren't all bad memories, I say quickly. There are good ones, too. But sometimes it feels like the bad memories have imprinted themselves into the floor. There's a bloodstain on the hardwood that won't come out, no matter how hard I try to clean it. Blood that bled from a dead girl long after she died. I bat the image of Abby out of my brain, hating that even though it's been nearly 4 years since I saw her in the apartment, she still has a hold on me. But I guess that's what happens when someone gets inside your soul like that. Perry, the doctor says gently. I snap out of it, give her a quick smile. The apartment is fine, really, but yeah, I've wanted to move. The location is great. I really do love living downtown. The only thing is, it's never quite felt like ours, you know? Like, it's always been his, but never really mine. She nods. So, what motivated the move? Did you have a discussion with your husband, or... Not exactly. I suck on my lip again, letting the incredulous feeling wash over me. We came into some money. A lot of money. She straightens up, crossing her delicate ankles in her cropped beige pants. May I ask how? 2 weeks ago, just before Halloween, I'd been getting messages and emails from a man, Harry, who wanted to use our services. And I don't mean like our video production services through Haunted Media. I mean our abilities. To see ghosts. Yeah, I say carefully, grateful that she said it. He said he had a wife who died and he wanted us to talk to her.
Wanted you and Dex to talk to her?
Yes. And I ignored the messages because I thought he was a loon, and the last thing I wanted to do was step back into that world. But he didn't give up easily. He found out where we lived. Waited for Dex to leave the apartment, and then accosted him. Told him the deal. I pause. Only what he told him and what he hadn't told me was that he wanted to pay us $100,000. She blinks at me, mouth falling open. You're kidding me. I shake my head. I thought the same, that it couldn't be real. $100,000 to just go into the abandoned house and talk to his dead wife.
And so you did it?
She looks surprised when I nod. I know how often you talk about that life and how you're so glad you've put it behind you. I know, I say with a sigh. I know, and I really had to think about it, but... I don't know. It was making Dex really happy. Like, happier than I'd seen him in a long time. And that, plus the money, which we need, I figured maybe it was worth the risk.
And was it?
I shrug, looking down at my hands, at the chipped, dusky blue nail polish. I'm not sure yet.
Did you get paid?
We did.
I tell her, meeting her eyes. But I don't feel good about it. She frowns. What do you mean? I mean, we did what Harry asked. We went into the house, though it wasn't exactly how we thought it was going to go down. He wasn't even there. His weird stepson was there to show us around, like he was giving us a tour. Time just flew by, and by the end of it, we hadn't talked to her. We hadn't talked to anyone. So you feel like you don't deserve the money, is what you're saying? Yeah. She crosses and uncrosses her ankles again, leaning back in her chair to study me. Do you want to talk about what you saw in there? What makes you think I saw something? Did you? I close my eyes for a moment, quickly going over what happened in my head on Halloween night. There was Dex, my sister Ada, and her boyfriend Jay. We were all in Halloween costumes. Harry's stepson, Atlas Poe, met us outside the house and brought me and Dex inside while Ada and Jay waited in the front yard. I clear my throat. The house had some crazy fucking vibes, that's for sure. It was so weird inside, dark, bigger than it should have been, like a chasm. Like it would never stop, like it led to somewhere deeper. I shake the feeling out of my head. Dex said he saw a woman, a ghost, and specifically heard a woman talking to him in his head. I believe him, of course, but I didn't see or hear her. That wasn't the dead wife? No, I don't think so. Atlas said it was someone else. Anyway, we explored the floors, and honestly, other than the oppressive, sketchy nature of the place, I didn't see anything until the end. Until I saw a river of blood flowing out from under a locked bathroom door before it retreated. The light suddenly went on, and, well, then I saw things. Things? People. Dead people. Ghosts. Whatever. And then they disappeared, and that was that. We left. A tiny smile lifts the corner of her mouth. You say that all so simply. It was surprisingly simple. She leans forward, her elbows on her knees. Perry, for as long as you've been coming here, you've been very straightforward about what you've seen. You've also been very straightforward about how your gift, your ability, has made you feel. You've told me you've seen ghosts throughout the years, even after leaving the show. You've also told me that you don't tell your husband that you do. It's just not a big deal. I'm used to it. But he's protective of me, and I don't want him to worry. I know that, which is why I'm a little concerned about how flippant you're being about the whole ordeal. You just willingly stepped back into a part of your life you were more than happy to leave behind. I know money is a huge part of it, but this isn't something to be taken lightly. This is the bigger change here. Bigger than getting the money, than wanting to sell your apartment. You need to come to terms with that. I think that over, inspecting my cuticles now. My heartbeat has picked up the pace, and I can feel it pulsing against the anchor tattoo on my wrist. I don't want to come to terms with it, I tell her quietly. She nods, slowly, pausing. How did it make you feel when you agreed to do this, when you went into the house and saw the things you've been trying to hide from? Scared, I admit. Of course I was scared. But I think I was more terrified at the idea of doing it than actually doing it. I was afraid that it could ruin us. You know, there was so much pain after my mother died, after Dex... Well, I was so afraid that doing that, inviting the dead to communicate, to be seen, that it would pull us back into that pain. I exhale, my breath shaking. But when I went inside, it was like the fear was gone. Well, okay, the fear was still there, but it had changed into something thrilling, I guess you could say. A positive emotion. I smile faintly. I think so. I felt both scared and comfortable. Like I was doing something I knew how to do, even if it wasn't a particularly nice thing. And what did it feel like to have your husband at your side through all of that? When you saw the ghosts at the end, and he saw them too, when you realized you didn't have to hide that from him anymore, What did that feel like?
Relief, I admit. The truth was, I wasn't sure what to expect. Dex has been on medication for a few years now, and we don't really talk about ghosts anymore. I don't tell him what I've seen, and I've assumed he hasn't seen any because the man would definitely tell me. Neither of us knew what to expect. But when he saw the lady in the dark, then I knew it hadn't really left him. And I was somewhat relieved. As hellish as it is to see the dead, his history with medication has been complicated. Now we knew the drugs were working with him this time around. He's able to get better, manage his anxiety and ADHD through medication, without it affecting who he really is at heart.
And how did he feel about it? You said you hadn't seen him that happy in a long time.
He's ecstatic, I tell her, smiling, because it's impossible not to smile when I'm thinking about how happy Dex has been lately. He wants to go back and do it again.
And will you?
I think so. Only because it doesn't feel right to take the man's money and have nothing to show for it. I want to do it right this time, connect with his wife, earn it. Of course, Dex wants to film the damn thing.
Like your old show?
No, I say adamantly. Nothing like that. To be honest, I'm not even sure he knows. In the past, before my mother died, we talked about becoming paranormal, well, investigators. I know that sounds ridiculous. Do you know who the Warrens are?
Of course, the couple who investigated Amityville, the Enfield poltergeist, the Smurl haunting, and many others.
Wow, that's impressive knowledge for a psychologist. Perhaps treating me has rubbed off on her.
Yeah, I say. I used to think that could be us, using our abilities for good instead of exploitation.
That's another reason why I agreed to go into the house. The man wanted us to talk to his wife, to pass on messages. I felt like I could help.
That's a noble way of looking at it, she says. But it's one thing to say it, and another to do it. Would it be just this once, or would you make it a thing?
I don't know, I tell her, and I really don't. I have a hard time thinking it could be a career.
You'd be surprised what people pay for, though I guess you already have proof of that. She presses her lips, rubbing her nude lipstick together. Has your relationship with Dex changed since then?
I run my tongue over my teeth, my heart doing a little backflip in my chest.
A little?
How so? I feel my cheeks go hot already. Man, this always happens when I talk about sex with her, or with anyone, really. Our sex life has, picked up.
That's positive, she says, smiling.
Yeah, I'm not complaining. I let out a soft laugh, trying to pull my hair in front of my face so she can't get a good look at me.
It's just a big change. I'm assuming he's initiating it.
Oh, yes.
And you don't have a problem with it?
Nope. I pause. It's just surprising, that's all. The man is, I don't even know, insatiable, I guess. It feels like when we first got together, you know? That kind of energy, passion, obsession.
She raises a brow. Obsession?
Maybe that's the wrong word, because it's good, whatever it is. Can obsession be good?
I want to say possession, but I let the word stay on my tongue.
I mean, it's really good. I'm just getting used to it. As you know, our sex life really suffered when he was on his antidepressants, and it took a long time, even after he went off them, for things to go back to normal. But this
sounds pretty amazing, if you ask me, she says softly. And when I look at her, she has a twinkle in her eye.
So, I have to ask, have you told him about what you want? What we've talked about? That you want a child?
I swallow, stiffening slightly, as a strange sense of shame floods through me. I shake my head.
No, not yet.
Do you think maybe he's picking up on that? That I want a baby? Could explain the sex.
I frown, trying to think. It's been about 4 months since I really felt my biological clock kick in.
It was always there, but I'd done a pretty good job of ignoring it. After all, I'm young. I was dealing with a new career, a marriage, the death of my mother. Oh, and there was all that, don't let Perry and Dex ever have a child because they'll both die and the kid will become the Antichrist shit. So whenever I felt that longing, I pushed it away. There were times that Dex brought it up with me too, but I shut it down pretty fast because I didn't want to deal with it. It scared me. It still scares me. The idea of becoming pregnant, of having a baby, of being parents. It scares me for all the normal reasons it scares anyone, and then, of course, all the batshit crazy reasons that are only applicable to us. But ever since this one sunny day in July, when we were lying on the grass in Gasworks Park, watching a young family run around, I was hit with it. I'd never felt anything like it. I woke up that morning with the idea of a baby as something that might happen one day, to going to bed that night knowing it had to happen, that it's all I ever wanted. I wanted this for us so badly, I felt like we wouldn't ever be complete without it. Fucking terrifying, if you ask me. And so I let that want just fester away inside me, too scared to voice it to Dex. Which is ridiculous, because I know it would make him happy. It's never been a secret how he's felt about having kids. Yet I know the minute I tell him that I want a family is the minute that will become a reality. And as much as I want to have his baby, want to raise our child together and be a family, I'm also scared the worst could happen. I've been through the worst before. What if it's waiting for me again? I don't think he knows, I say eventually. But you say he can hear your thoughts sometimes, she points out. I usually block them around him, just in case. I give her a sheepish smile. It's automatic, purely instinctive. It's just easier that way, unless I want him to hear them. But you can hear his thoughts. I try not to. He's also gotten good at blocking me. We've come to an agreement when it comes to the privacy of our minds, for both our sakes. All I know is if Dex was picking up on my I'd die for a baby thoughts, he'd let me know. She adjusts herself in her chair and looks over her shoulder at Porgus, snoozing away in the corner, and then looks back at me. I'm not sure if I should be telling you this, but sometimes I can hear your thoughts too. I blink at her. Are you serious? She nods. I try not to hear them, but I do. Honestly, it makes things so much easier, Perry. I wish I had this with all my patients. You hear me. Her smile is quick, apologetic. But that means, I start. The only people I've been able to do this to are people like us. Dex, Ada, my mother, Maximus. People with abilities. If Dr. Lafo can hear me. I squint at her in disbelief. You see them too. You see ghosts too. Another brief smile. We're not here to discuss me, Perry. Just you. You can't just drop a bomb on me like that. Fucking hell. She sees ghosts too. She can hear my thoughts. No wonder she never treated me like I was crazy. It's because she knew I was telling the truth the whole damn time. Wow, I say, sitting back. That is just wow. She smirks at me for a moment and then clears her throat, her features becoming soft and innocuous again. Shall we continue? I nod, though my brain is still tripping over that revelation. Back to the baby, she says, bringing my attention around. You don't think Dex is picking it up from your thoughts, but that doesn't mean he's not doing so subconsciously. You often talk about how linked you are. That could be a possibility. Could be, I admit. Maybe that's it, but honestly, I think it's the fucking adrenaline in his system. From dealing with the dead again. I know he's never felt more alive. He's told me as much. She studies me for a moment and then nods. I suppose it doesn't really matter. She says, eventually you will have to tell him how you feel, about what you want for the both of you. She pauses, And, Perry, based on what you've told me in the past, I know exactly why you're holding back. The fear over those warnings. At some point, you have to find out what matters more. What you want, or what you fear.
Chapter 2. November is a shitty time to be out riding your motorbike, especially in Seattle. And yet, for some reason, I thought the clouds would hold off today. I was wrong.
The minute I got on Putt-Putt and pulled away from Dr. Lavo's office in Northgate, the sky opened up and let loose a torrential downpour.
Going home via the I-5 would be the fastest way, but I didn't trust drivers in this city. You'd think they'd know how to drive in the rain, considering it rains all winter long, but they don't, and especially not when you add a little motorbike to the mix. So I take the long way, driving on side streets, cursing myself for not taking an Uber today. While the rain sinks in through my leather jacket, my jeans soaked and cold. But even with the rain as a painful distraction,
I keep going over what Dr. Lavo said.
Not just that I need to choose between my fear and what I want, but that she can see ghosts too. I wanted to talk to her about that in detail, because it's not every day that you come across someone just like yourself. Especially since she's a psychologist. I can't imagine the kind of insight she might have. I'm almost home. And even though the rain is still pouring and I'm completely drenched and cold, for some reason, I don't turn right on the east anyway toward the apartment. Instead, I continue along Bellevue Avenue until I'm in the First Hill neighborhood. My brain doesn't even have time to catch up until I find myself coming to a stop outside the Stimson Green Mansion, a.k.a. the Haunted House. I swing my leg over the bike and walk a few feet, stopping just where the lawn begins. I honestly don't even know why I'm here. It's like I was riding in my sleep for the last few minutes. My phone beeps from inside my leather jacket, and I know it's Dax wondering if I'm done with my appointment yet and if he needs to pick me up in the storm. Although now the rain has suddenly stopped, the gray clouds above growing lighter. I stare up at the house, looking at it with new eyes in the daylight. It doesn't look as scary as it did on Halloween. The paint job doesn't look as tired and is a pale yellow instead of a decaying gray. And the dark brown trim looks well maintained. The lower windows are still boarded up, but the plywood looks fresh and new. My eyes drift along the house, moving from the first floor to the third, searching. For what? I don't know. There's just some crazy energy pulling my eyes there, making me feel like someone is watching. Or something, of course. Can't ever rule that fucking out. That's when I see it. A figure. At a window on the second floor. A tall, familiar-looking man. A flash of red hair. Large hands on the curtains, snapping them closed. My heart drops in my chest, free-falling, as I stand there in awe, staring at the window curtains. That couldn't have been Max. It looked just like him. I only saw the man for a second, and he wasn't clear at all, but somewhere deep in my gut, I know it was him. That he's in that house. I start walking down the path, being pulled forward like a moth to a flame, not really processing what I'm doing. I just know I saw Maximus, the man who died saving my husband's life. A man, for all intents and purposes, I never expected to see again. I climb up the creaking front steps, heading to the door. I stop just before my hand grabs the handle. "What are you doing?" I ask myself, blood pounding in my ears. My hand starts to shake, moves forward toward the handle, like I'm being pulled, like I'm compelled to open the door and walk inside and look for a man that I know is dead, the very man whose name I have tattooed on my ribs in memorial.
"Can I help you?"
I yelp, the magnetic energy between me and the house severing in two, and I spin around to see a man standing at the foot of the stairs, staring up at me. Atlas Poe,
the owner of the house. He's looking at me curiously, wavy dark brown hair blowing across his face in the cold wind.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?